was very, he was big back too. Anyway, so then I was having, you know, I changed the psychology. The psychology is still very much based on, in the West at least, a very mechanistic model. I'm a disciple here. I'm the majority. Where are you studying?
Macquarie
University. Okay, he's doing psychology, just finishing. And myself, pretty much amongst all this mess, because by then the Vietnam War was going on, it was all this contact with Asian culture, Asian philosophy, and everything else, and there's a lot more to life than appears to have been, you know, discovered to this point. So Carl Jung, in this whole process, was one of the highest people we encountered in Jungian philosophy a little bit. So then I graduated and was offered tuition, everything, accommodation, everything. Wouldn't have had to pay a penny to go all the way for the PhD at UCLA and Northwestern. I thought, okay, let me get out of the state and try something new and live where there was snowing. And I went there. And my mentor was Donald Campbell. He was president of the American Psychological Association. And he was a genius, he was an incredible person. So I was talking with him about everything. He said, yeah, you're right. This is this very kind of, you know, mechanized idea of the world. And there's a lot more, apparently, in Asia, which you're just coming in contact with. And if you want to be safe and, you know, stick with this career track, then by the time you're 45 years old, you'll be able to start doing some creative things. Yes, that didn't sound great. So if you have any courage, you know, you'll get out and, you know, experiment and so on. So then I started working with the Second City. It's an improvisational theater troupe in Chicago, one of the best. And it's really incredible. If investigating improvisational theater is something really nice. You discover they have a lot of techniques and stuff, you know, for the personality and everything else. You know. Actually, what we're doing as the Hare Krishna movement is Gandharva Veda. Vastu Veda is architecture, Ayurveda is medicine, Danda Veda is political science, and Gandharva Veda is music, dance, and drama, and realizing the ultimate truth of that. And even this Western theater tradition, Viola Spolin, improvisation for the theater, it's a very long tradition of how to create a different personality. And you can see this, it works. You know, these things, just, people have just different personalities and real reactions and so on. So it was the next step from psychology, was seeing the theater traditions. You know. I was fever. I've been from June 1st to August First, I was in 28 different airports. I took a 3-month rest and started off again. And then I got a little cut up the fever here somewhere and stuff. But our yoga is powerful. So yeah, I see a fact. If I wasn't doing this, I wouldn't be able to handle this. But anyway. So anyway, it was very, very, very not worth investigating, improvisational theater. And I have a suspicion in the drama department here, you'll find, you know, some classes, improvisational theater. And it really helps you get in touch with creative potential and this kind of stuff and think in new ways and so on. Okay, so then after that, then I got a book from the Hare Krishnas. I read it for 1 year, visited the temple, and I headed east, and I got a black belt in Okinawan karate, which I learned a tremendous amount of prana and all the energy flowing in the body. And our tradition is Bengali, you know, Vaishnavas. So then I'm very satisfied. This is very, very nice, deep, profound tradition. So continue with that. And within the Hare Krishna movement, there's all kinds of programs, really broad. I gravitated, of course, towards the university-type programs. And so with the Bhaktivedanta Institute, we did two world congresses for a synthesis of science and religion. George Wald, his Nobel, he discovered, what is it, vitamin C or something, Nobel Prize. Charles Townes, you know him and all? He invented the laser. Yeah. He gets a little bit of royalty. He probably left his body by now, but for every single laser that's used, he was getting a small percentage of royalties. So you know, every CD player, yeah, so there's plenty of money in science if you want to do it properly. But he was a very nice person. You know? So he had several people participating in this thing, trying to create that science and religion to come together and do something good, you know, working together like that. So first was in Bombay, and all these very nice international people. Then later in Calcutta. And along with that, one conference in the middle on, it was the first international conference on the study of consciousness within science. And that was tough. That's like some of the most boring lectures I've ever heard of my on earth. But yeah, these were like Sir John Eccles, you know, Nobel laureate was there, and who else? George Wall, other people, you see, Sir John. I always remember one of the sessions was named, Was Consciousness One of the Elements of the Array of the State Vector at the Origin of the Universe? What's your idea? So it was like, and George Wall, a big Nobel laureate, he said that the way we've structured science, you can't deal with these things. He was giving very practical examples of how the different mechanisms of consciousness we can identify, but consciousness itself is not a part of that. I can say one word now and everybody would go, oh, there's certain words you just don't say, right? Yeah. So as science conferences, if you said the C word, everybody was like, oh, you said the C word. Yeah, it was really, consciousness was like, it doesn't exist. But now then, so we organize, and we're in a position to organize a discussion how consciousness can be dealt with in a bridge, and maybe better than an array of state vectors. So, but again, my nature of all of me is more like cultural anthropology. So I ended up with, we started our own corporation in 2004, North American Institute for Oriental and Classical Studies. Our president, my friend Ravi Singh, he's director of geriatric psychiatry at the best psychiatric hospitals in Tennessee. And we did bring very well. We organized a program with National Museum of India in Calcutta, the contribution of ancient India towards making a better world. It was inaugurated by Justice of the Supreme Court. Two governors of West Bengal were there, and very effective. The Enlightenment Museum said he never had such that participation. Because India does have a lot to offer, you know, very still, it's very good contributions. And so like that, we've been taking it forward. And in Peru, we've been very, very successful in Peru. Peru is in between. Peru is like very oriental in nature. At the same time, too, geographically, it's right in this occidental atmosphere. So it's a very good place just to, in depth, people can, you know, appreciate these different cultures and try and take advantage of both of them. So we went from a small, maybe twice as big, like maybe 1.5 times as big psychiatric center. One big psychiatrist, different people. Next year we were in the best cultural center. Next year we were in the basement of the National Library. Next year we were in the main auditorium. You know? And then last year we just finished this program off this year. And what we've been doing is, there it is. Yeah. Can you read that? Can you translate that? Yeah. You should be able to. Yeah. La psicología y lo sagrado, psychology and the sacred. Psychology and the sacred. So of course we have very, very powerful representation from Union psychologists. And also the Jesuit. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
You know Jesuits? Jesuits, yeah. But in their day, you know, prime they were called God's Marines. Very like, you know. Now they kind of look more mellow, but still very, very potent. Actually, what is it? President Pope is Jesuit. Yeah. And he had to change to something else because they have a vow not to become the Pope. And Francis Clooney, who's the director of the Harvard School of Divinity, which is probably the most powerful in the world, also Jesuit. And we're starting to develop very good relations that we, many things we agree. What is reality? And who are we? And how can we become satisfied and, you know, live with other people in a higher perspective? So we did that, and this was the program. Everybody got when they came in, with psychology and the sacred. Then we went to Chile, and in Chile, it's the next one down, we did Hamlet and Arjuna. All right. Arjuna is a hero in the Bhagavad Gita, and Hamlet. Both of them have to, you know, chastise their family members. Hamlet has to kill his uncle, right? Kill his uncle and chastise his mother. In some very no uncertain terms about her activities. And of course, it's the most profound, you know, piece of literature in Occidental culture, you know, so on. Everybody knows this question. What's the question? To be? Yeah, it's like, that's it. It's the whole thing. What is the impetus to action? It's exactly the same thing in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna's sitting there with exactly the same situation. Hamlet, the ghost is coming, his uncle, and telling him, I didn't die a natural death, your uncle killed me. The Lion King, anybody seen The Lion King? One of the biggest grossing films in the world. The guy's directly admitted, but he just took Hamlet and just, you know, updated it. You know, why do anything extra? So he asked him, but his uncle is like, become the king, and like his father died. And the other thing was that his mother then married her brother-in-law. His Hamlet's father, his mother, then okay. And maybe that might be okay, but his friend Horatio shows up and he says, oh, Horatio, why are you here? And he says, well, I've come for the funeral of your father. He said, don't say you've come for the funeral of my father. Come to say you've come for the second marriage of my mother. And Horatio says, well, you know, it did follow a little quick after your father's death. He said, no, we should be thrifty. The cooked meats at the funeral feast did double duty as cold cuts at the wedding feast. This is pretty quick. So Hamlet's not sure. Maybe there's a ghost just trying to trick him, you know, and get him to kill his uncle and be blasting his mother and call her something, you know. So some friends, some actors come through. They come through Dunsen, or wherever it is. He's in Denmark. He knows him from Paris. He says, hey, you do this play. Can you change it? And I'll write some stuff in it for you. Okay. So the king in the play, reenact the murder the way the ghost described it, right? Pouring poison by sleeping in his ear and stuff. And he's watching his uncle to see what the reaction is. And sure enough, the uncle flips out and goes out and angry and says, aha, that's it, that's what happened. He did murder my father. And the play also, the king is talking to the queen of the play. And he says, you know, I'm getting old, my powers are going, and soon I'll be dying, and you're young, and you should get remarried. She says, oh no, I'll never get married again. She goes this whole thing, you know. And one of the lines is, they say a woman who kisses a second man in bed kills the first one twice. Shakespeare has the language. We were doing this with a professional actress, or her disciples is a professional actress, and she broke down. Is this, we actually get into the drama and stuff. Drama is intense. You know? So we've been doing this sometime, and we did this one with very nice, was Raul Zurita. He's the poet, what do you call it, the poet laureate for Chile. He's about 80 years old. When he looks at you, it's like, you know, you figure anything I do is going to maybe, you know, to take up 30% of this guy's intelligence. He's like so, like, very nice and, you know, profound. He's like, you know. And he said actually the most enchanting thing he ever read was the Mahabharata, a translation like that. Very nice person, very profound. Chile's had two Nobel laureates in poetry. Very good, very nice people. So very good, you know, years and years of work, but results there. You know? And now we're trying to go ahead with this, and they want to do more things. Another one we did while we were there was Carl Jung. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami said of all the Western philosophers that he come in contact, Socrates he liked. Then after that, he said of all of them, Jung had the most sense. Jung's biography, Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. It's very easy to read. It's very nice. It's just, you know, so many broader perspectives on cosmology and the self and the mind and the world. And also, he's a psychologist. So when you're reading it, you'll find many things that allow you to stop and look at your own, you know, psychology, your parents and all this kind of stuff, and why I have these certain feelings, and, you know, so forth and so on. Memories, Dreams, and Reflections. So it's a very active community too. You know, Jung left his body like 1965 or something. But still the community's going on. There's lots of stuff that was never published and so on. You mentioned this many times, but it's very nice. He was in New Mexico about 1930 or something, maybe before World War II. And he was talking with one shaman from the Hopi Indians. And Hopi Indians to this day are still considered very psychologically well-adjusted. They have a different view of the world. Their grammar is different than our grammar. So he said to Mountain Lake, why is it that you people think that all Europeans are crazy? And Mountain Lake said, because they say they have thoughts in their head. And Jung said, well, of course, you know, how else are you going to have thoughts? And Mountain Lake said, only a madman has thoughts in his head. The same man has thoughts in his heart. And Jung was so shocked. He couldn't talk, the mountain lake gave him his chance to step there. He said for the first time, he actually felt that he understood how other cultures looked at Europeans. There's a poetess from South Africa. She says, a woman thinks with her belly, okay? A man thinks with his heart. And a white devil, he thinks with his head. Okay. So how many white devils or devilesses here? This is industrialized society. You know, I'm here measuring and calculating and comparing. But what's behind it all? What's the whole purpose for this thing? There's a term. What is this? Appropriate technology? There's a term like that. It means a technology which has some perspective on it. That we can do so many things, right? But Einstein said, Quantum Questions, another excellent book. It's all edited philosophical thoughts of all these Schrodinger and all these people. So Einstein said, science can tell us how things are, but it can't tell us how they should be. Right? You all know the airplane Enola Gay, right? Ever heard of the airplane Enola Gay? That's the one that delivered the first little present to Japan, in Hiroshima. And 140,000 people. How many people at the university? 140,000. Every single one of them fried, burned, vaporized, dying of cancer. All with one person, one button, and you make the decision. Okay, you're the bombardier. You're the bombardier, you're the pilot. Okay. Science can take us across vast stretches of open, trackless water for hours and hours. Science can, okay. And then you get within a certain distance, you're mapping. Something like about maybe, you know, 50 miles away, the pilot's talking to the bombardier, you know, we are time to arm instrument, okay, sector one arm, sector two arm, sector three arm, bomb bay doors are open, okay, final armament. Okay, maybe 35 miles away, you know, pilot says to bombardier, you are flying the ship, and the bombardier actually takes over for the final run. 10, 9, are you going to push the button? 7, 6, 3, 2, 1.
Yes.
Yeah, you're going to push the button? Okay, 140,000 people are dead. Yeah. You have a long life afterwards and many interesting nightmares.
Yeah.
But at the end, okay, the bombardier could have said, I'm not going to do it. Why? It's wrong. When the thing's not working? No, it's morally wrong. What do you mean morally wrong? we're Air Force, we don't deal with morals. It's like, I'm putting the airplane into a loop. Okay, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Confucius Analectics, you know, Socrates, Shake. Okay. Before this, there was one proposition, is we're not gonna bomb Hiroshima, we're gonna drop the bomb in the ocean, and to show the guys, hey, look guys, we're not blowing up blocks, we're blowing up entire towns. Surrender, give it up. But the military said, these guys are so fanatical, you give them half a chance to adjust psychologically, and they're going to say, okay, we're going to go to the end. And millions of Japanese and millions of American soldiers will die. She kind of hit them hard and moved in. Maybe it was correct. You know, because that was it. The Japanese emperor, they're still pushing him to go on. And he said, the American divine wind has blown. Yeah. There can be no reply. It's just destiny is with them now. So very, what's the word? Einstein, everybody recognizing that science, the way we've structured it, it deals with a certain aspect of reality. And political science, it deals with something else. And if it's being done properly, it's a good thing. You learn how to relate people, to relate to each other, resolve conflicts, and so on. Bismarck, you know Bismarck, right? The German emperor. You probably know, okay, all right. He named a battleship after him. Anyway, the whole thing, he was famous for his diplomacy and uniting Germany and stopping all these wars and stuff. You know, he killed 40,000 people doing it, but everybody agreed if he hadn't done it, they would have lost maybe like 120,000. So he came up and he like, that's political science. Yeah. Yes. Same with biology. Yeah, we killed a lot of rats to figure out how to stop polio. Yeah. So anyway, we kind of organize these programs. Carl Ewan, Oil Nothing. And this is the magazine we produced with Psychology and the Sacred, Solaris, the second time. And very good contributions. It's very nice. This is Umberto Maturana. He's a candidate for Nobel Prize. No, it was a two of them. What's his name? Claudio Naramo is also a candidate and so on. And interesting, it's like, there are many nice people in the world. It's one of the things that happens is that people, see, you have your philosophy, your Hare Krishna, Vedanta, all this kind of stuff. But that's nice and we're interested. But we're very interested because it seems like you guys have some kind of vision where you can put people together at different levels and stuff. And the Vedas have that. In India, they don't kill anybody. And they don't kill dogs, they don't kill, you know, street dogs. Any street dogs in Brisbane? You don't see them. Why? Why is that? Because you kill them all. His stray dog running around, he's taken right off and given 5 days to be adopted by somebody else, and you take him in and put him to sleep. You put him to sleep. Yeah. So there's, in India, no, it's street dogs and cows and pigs and what else? Transvestites. It's a whole culture of transvestites, right? They, okay, it's just everybody has a place, you know, stuff, and we can accommodate everybody. You know, so. So maybe some world philosophy like that. You know. Hector Behar, the guys we're working with, he was an associate of Che Guevara, this big general, revolutionary general in South America. Now he works for the United Nations. And he says the United Nations estimate, which is informed, you know, is that every year 1 million people commit suicide. 1 million people are pushed to the point, not of being thinking about it, or not, you know, whatever, you know, committing suicide by, you know, marijuana, beer, and pizza. You know, but actually killing themselves. You know. And it shows you that that's more than all the people who are dying in all the wars in the world. You hear about the wars in the world going on, more people are killing themselves, you know, than other people killing the social complex. It shows somewhere where our priorities should be aimed. Real priorities are these subtle sciences and so on. And the spirituality, the next other whole program like that and developing that. So some of the programs we're doing, I can go on talking for 7 days and 7 nights without stopping here, but I don't know if anybody has any questions or comments. Yes. Complaints. Meditation, we can talk about that. Yes.
Why does there need to be a why?
Huh?
Why does there need to be why for our existence? Yes. Why can it not just be that we're just here and it just happens to be it? Like a foundation for spirituality, it tries to go deeper, but what if that doesn't exist?
That's a broad
question.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. For example, Budweiser. And Budweiser, right? The king of beers, so well. You know Spuds McKenzie?
Sorry?
Spuds McKenzie.
Spuds McKenzie.
He didn't last very long. He was, for a while, he was their image. He was their image for Budweiser beer. He was a pit bull. They had Spuds McKenzie there with a big thing of beer in front of him, you know, with some stuff on it. He said, the guru of good times, Spuds McKenzie. So he's trying to get a little answer here. More recently, they had this guy with a can of Budweiser there saying, why ask why? So, just take another beer and you won't ask about it. Bears. You know bears, right? Okay, they're interesting guys. They're bored in a zoo, right? Bored, you know? So what they started doing is hiding food in trees and different stuff. The bear comes out in the morning and stuff and goes around, like, you know, trying to figure out how to get this, you know, ham out of the tree. And yesterday there was something here. He spends all day looking for food, and once a year, a little romance, you know, okay. He's satisfied. He has a good life, you know. All day looking for food, and every now and again, a little bit of, you know, grand romance, okay. But human being is blessed or cursed, you know, with intelligence, which is looking for subtler pleasures, like that. And if you go back, all these people, Socrates, Confucius, everybody else, they're dealing with this fact. Well, why not just let it exist? Well, the why question keeps coming up. Nature keeps pushing it on us. You see somebody die or something like that, or you're feeling like this. One example, one eagle, her egg rolled out of the nest, went down into the chicken yard, and all the chickens came out and said, okay, it's an egg, we should sit on it. Sometimes a very ugly chicken came out. I looked around, everybody's pecking for cockroaches. He started pecking for cockroaches. But he got bigger than the rest of the chickens. And sometimes when the eagles would go by in the sky, he would look up and move his wings and think, something is not right. So the first level, almost universally, of spirituality of the sacred is immortality. Immortality. And confronting this situation of why we're going to die and all this kind of stuff. So that's the first impetus. I'm saying that's all we're talking about. It's because Socrates says the same thing. If there's an Phaedo, if there's no immortality, then why do we strive for it? You take an ant and put pressure on it, he'll struggle to live. So there's something here which is just making us ask this question, why do I have to die? I'm not afraid of death. Yeah, it's because you haven't come close to it. So when you actually come close to it or something, right now, if you want to, stop eating if you're not afraid of death. Stop eating for 1 month, right? Or stop taking water for 3 days. Or stop breathing for 3 minutes. We can accommodate you right now in a plastic bag. No, it's very deep. Why does everybody go to work? Because I don't go to work, I won't make money, and you get some money to starve, not live in a bad place, and depressive, and there'll be no entertainment, and no this kind of stuff. And,
So Darwin presented his take on it as
survival of the fittest.
Right.
Yeah.
So selection pressure and...
So nature is putting pressure on us.
Hmm. Yeah, so with the model that I guess our physical constitution is here because starting if we came from single cell organisms all the way to here, our genetic makeup is made to try to want to survive and get better in some sense.
Yes.
And I guess there is a sort of hidden force, but...
Yes. If you look at Darwin, we do a lot of Darwinian program. One of the basic principles is survival. Actually, Darwin didn't say fittest, but fittingness. And for him, evolutionist, look, it was a very good article on the scientific roots of Nazism American scientist, a big journal, very powerful journal. Not Scientific American, but American scientist. 140,000 distinguished scientists and engineers. So a very good article on the how the scientific view and everything else fit into the development of the whole Nazi culture.
Yeah, it's just
catastrophe.
I think there was a term for it, wasn't it? I think there's not genetics. I think
there's social Darwinism.
Right. Okay.
That was the actual term. Because we got a genetic thing. Now we know that the best society has a right to annihilate the other societies, and they have the right.
Right.
Might makes right. So, and then he's making this point that for Darwin, evolution wasn't necessarily like a step up. It was just that was the result of pressure. So if we take this fundamental thing, our Darwin also was recognizing this, that those species survive. Okay, first off, you've got to have mutations. And mutations are coming by chance, right? At least we discussed this today. What was his name? Bertrand Russell, Nobel laureate guy. He said the most important concept in the 20th century is the concept of chance, because nobody has the slightest idea of what it means. You start going around asking people what to define chance, and you start getting a lot of... The etymology of the word is a French word. Look it up there. Mm. It means to fall out.
Mm.
Yes. It was caused by falling out. Thank you. You increased my knowledge a great deal. So we don't know. A random event is an event the cause of which cannot be known. Does such a thing exist? We accept it on faith. We can predict so many things. We're going to predict so many things, but we're accepting that somewhere there is a random event. We even have random event generators. Are they generating random events? Not really. They have cases where random event generators have produced microchips which caused flaws in airplane guidance systems because the algorithm wasn't random. You know, so there's a whole very philosophical basis to it. Okay, so we got chance, let's put that aside here. We got some new species which has purple feathers coming out and pneumatic tires. Okay. You know, then the thing is, it fits better into nature. Right? Now this is a problem because that means if we're evolving, not just like adapting, if we're evolving higher, that means there's already some ideal form in nature. And we're just fitting into it better and better. And so You know, hamsters are better than cockroaches. Dogs are better than hamsters. Software engineers are better than biologists. And, you know, some computers like that and so on. But our actual experience is, for example, one of the most famous examples is the moths. A very famous example of, like, in England there was always green fields, and the green moths were okay. Then industrialization came, everything turned gray. So the few moths that were gray were surviving because then the birds couldn't see them, the green moths were exposed, they got eaten. Okay. So therefore we conclude that gray moths are better than green moths. But then they cleaned the atmosphere up, they became green again. Now the gray moths are showing up, and the green moths are surviving. So maybe also nature on a very broad scale is also, you know, changing. So those who fit today don't fit tomorrow. So very fundamental problems with trying to explain everything through evolution. And it's a big school too, it's punctuated evolution. There's nobody who's living just on Darwinian evolution now, it's gone through so many changes. But that's our maybe the fundamental point, is that if you're going to talk about things getting better rather than just change through adaptation, we accept change through adaptation, no problem with that. We accept genetic engineering, you know, so on. But saying that things are getting better, and that therefore the highest human beings are the highest culture, and that the Third Reich and Adolf Hitler and the Nazis are the highest culture, and have a right to kill everybody else off, and we're saying, Where is this, you know, this higher thing that you're actually fitting into, which justifies all this?
Right. Yeah. As eugenics, that's the term I remember before.
Huh?
Eugenics, I think that's what they coined it as.
Yeah. And the guy who was promoting it was Hegel.
Was it?
German biologist.
Yeah.
He was what's it called? Embryology repeats morphology. That his idea was that the embryo had a tail, he was following the evolution of the thing. It actually didn't pan out, it was the thing. He wrote a book called Secrets of the Universe or something, and it sold like 100,000 copies, which at that time was gigantic. So Nobel laureate supported him. And he was directly preaching euthanasia. That certain races are dragging us behind, they should be eliminated peacefully and quietly. And then, okay, it's a philosophy, but then one German politician, Adolf Schickelgruber, took up as a practical political philosophy, changed his name from Adolf Schickelgruber to Adolf Hitler. And if you read the history of World War II, it's terrible to see how much it was based upon philosophy and ideology and so on. Yeah? So we're vigorous about fighting this area of certain ideologies and stuff. You know? That life is just simply a chemical production. And abortion is just simply clean up your little problem. Here's $100. It's not a little problem. Say, I have your baby. It can be very terrible when applied to that. So philosophy is a very, you know, important aspect.
Yeah.
So I would say, ask why? Because we're being pushed to ask. You know? I remember when I was, maybe other people hear it, but I was about maybe like 4 years old, when I suddenly realized I was going to die. Our neighbor's dog died, you know, and I realized I'm going to die, you know. And I was just really depressed by the thought. I couldn't eat really. I couldn't tell my parents because I knew they couldn't do anything. But I already come in contact with Christianity and I was praying and stuff, and it seemed like a pretty reasonable proposition that there was this guy, Jesus Christ, and stuff. Okay, so went on that way and stuff. Bhagavad Gita says the same thing. Janma mritya jara vyadhi. These are the four causes of knowledge: birth, death, disease, and old age. Yeah. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why me, Lord? I'm innocent. Why did this happen to me? Want to see your history, fellow? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good luck with your struggle against death.
Oh.
You know Janaka Maharaj?
No.
The father of Sita.
Oh, yeah, yes.
And Vishwamitra came. Vishwamitra greeted him. How are the citizens? He's the king. And then Janaka greeted Vishwamitra and said, how is your struggle for immortality? So everybody has a particular thing. What are you studying?
What do I study? Neuroscience.
Huh?
Neuroscience.
Neuroscience. Oh, wow. I did skull things on rats.
Yeah.
I tortured so many rats, you know.
Yep, I know how you feel.
One of our, we have these colony cages, One guy had this thing where the rats had these, they were being shot in their feet until they pushed the right button, you know. So he was doing all his experiments. He was there late at night in the laboratory and stuff, and he didn't know, but there was a timer that automatically turned the lights off at 10 o'clock just to save electricity. So he was there, all of a sudden the lights went off, and all the rats in the colony cages started running around. And all of a sudden they got this panic thing that they got out. It was totally dark, and the rats were all kind of like, you know. So he fell over one cage. Next morning he was a kid cut like that. Turned the lights back on, he's looking, and all the rats are in the cage.
It's pretty sad.
Yes, yes.
But on that note of neuroscience, one of my other questions I want to ask you was, with increasing studies and knowledge coming out about how the brain functions,
yes,
and how we can,
yes,
alter somebody's personality, emotions,
yes,
state of mind through altering chemical reactions in the brain.
Yes.
How do you reconcile with that? How does...
Because what we're taking, again, I came in contact with this very scientific point of view and analyzing 1 year before I even visited a Hare Krishna temple, reading the literature, and then investigating with, again, a director of our institute who's head of geriatric medicine, and every 6 years, 7 years, he has to be recertified. So we get involved with people on the cutting edge with these things and so on. The way that the Vedic culture would deal with this would be more from the perspective, one way, there's many ways, from Ashtanga Yoga. And Ashtanga Yoga is Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama. Then Pranayama, you start to actually become very sensitive, like myself. I'm seeing what's causing this fever in terms of everything else, and I can actually adjust it. And otherwise, you know, okay, just be annihilated. Make it through, okay. And we learn a lot about how the prana flows in the body. And that's what you're doing. So internally, you can feel the nadi. Nadi are these different nerves, which probably refers to, if you want to really get into it, both the nervous system and the lymphatic system and the vascular system, all three. And by internal, you know, perception, you can actually become aware of these things. And just do, there's a kundalini you're raising from the Muladhara chakra, and you can go up. And you start, and I know people who've done this without proper guidance. One of my friends blew his prana out the right ear, and he's been half deaf in his right ear ever since 18 years old. No apparent physical damage directly, and so on. So it's actually very real. Prana, you can really get do heavy things and so on like that without guidance and so on. So we're recommending singing and dancing, which automatically adjusts the prana. If you're singing and dancing for God, some conception, then you know, it's just very natural. Okay, we chant on beads, right? Okay. The homunculus. Who knows the homunculus? How many people here know the homunculus? He knows the homunculus. What is the homunculus?
It's the neural representation for senses and sensory and motor actions. So it's the part of the brain.
On the cortex.
On the cortex.
Cerebral cortex.
Yeah.
There's a little man is there. Little woman, I guess. And is it built like your body?
Sorry?
No, it's like a distorted body because the lips and tongues are very big because there's a lot of innervation in the mouth. In the hands, there's a lot of innervation in the fingers. So the little homunculus. Look on the internet. You see this guy there over there. Some people with shorts on, he's got pants on his back. It's like, but yeah, so when you're chanting on beads and pronouncing the mantra properly, there's so much stimulation for the cerebral cortex and the fingers. So japa is very, very natural for him. Even more natural is singing and dancing. Because for singing and dancing, you have to have spatial orientation, temporal discrimination, and hopefully tonal discrimination. So when you're doing that, your cerebral cortex is just locked in. Our point is that the soul, Atma, becomes covered by the false ego, Ahankara, I'm the controller, I don't need God. Okay. Then it becomes covered by Buddhi, perspective, attitude, which is in the heart. And the Manas is the next element. Yeah. And these are all subtle things, but they're real. They're real. Where is Microsoft Word?
Where is it?
I can't say, because it's an idea. It's, you know, chemistry is a body of knowledge. Physics is a body of knowledge. So each of us has a body of knowledge. Well, this is starting to be very subtle. One psychologist could deal with this, not a neurophysiologist. But yeah, we keep the soul, it's so subtle it can keep a body of knowledge. And a lot of it can be unconscious and so on. When we become absorbed in the gross body, going in and out, like sponge out of the water and sponge. Okay, so then at some point, we, through the mind, use the brain. right? This is our point. The mind is like the business, and the brain is like the office, right? Yeah, it's like the cell phone. You're talking to your mother. Hello, mommy. Hello. Here's the new kitty. Hello, kitty. Meow, meow. Yeah. How thick is the image? 1 millimeter? Maybe. Behind that, the little cans, the little squares and stuff, which have nothing whatsoever to do with mommy or the kitty. So we got a simple project here. Take a scalpel, go right down, press hard, go vertical, open it up. Yes, beautiful woman, handsome man. This is what it is. This is shocking. We are cell phones. Yes, okay. Is mommy in the cell phone with an atom smasher? Like, no, mommy's projecting. So, okay, it's a very rational, you know, supportable, even by experimentation model. Maybe it's not true. But we're saying, yeah, that the self is projecting itself through buddhi, through intelligence, through manas, onto the tactile perspective. Western science is, industrialization, is extremely highly visually biased. Right? If you look at, you have the database here, right? The library. Just kick in visual perception and see how many references it gives you. I did it one time, a long time ago. It came back, I think it was 1,300. Then I put in acoustical perception, 130. Because we're so biased. And Marshall McLuhan, another anthropologist, they point this out. Indian culture is much more acoustically biased. Probably Australia, you can drive without a horn. But if you're in Delhi or Calcutta trying to drive without a horn, Baba, forget it. You're going to get in a wreck. Because I met people like, why is he honking at me? Because he's just telling you he's next to you. In America, you're honking at somebody. It's just like, you know, some thing, you know. Another one, this is really good. Space perception. E.T. Hall, Edward Thomas Hall. Others have incredible studies and cross-cultural studies in space perception. If you're touching somebody else right now, raise your hand. It has to be two people. You notice everybody has positioned themselves, so you're not touching somebody else, right? If he moved a little closer and started touching you with his knee, right away, it's... So every culture has different, but the mind, we create space. In some ways, this can be very sophisticated in science and so on. So different cultures have different space. British are the most. Stand off. Sure. So many Indians, when they come to America from India, Silicon Valley, after about 4 or 5 days of work, somebody will come and say, Rajiv. You know, I don't mean, this is not like a personal thing, this is a cultural thing. If you're standing a little bit close to people in terms of our culture, and especially the ladies feel a little uncomfortable and stuff, you feel, oh, okay, you don't stand that close to people. If I enter your private space, it means one of two things. Violence or romance.
Pretty sure.
I'm straight though. I'm heterosexual. I'm actually a monk. It's a fact. You don't think about it. His book is called The Hidden Dimension. And so on. He talks about one time, guys, I don't believe all this. He kept very subtly moving his chair closer to the other guy, and after about 5 minutes, he pointed, he moved the guy halfway across the room without the guy knowing it. He's been moving a little bit closer and stuff. You know? So space is also a product of the subconscious mind. There are many studies in psychology on this, how we generate this.
Okay.
This then goes to how we then do growth science. You
know? Right. Yeah. So can we separate the platform of information storage on the sort of mental, spirit, say soul level apart from the body? Because right now it seems very difficult.
Cloud memory.
So
cloud memory.
Cloud memory? Yeah, so that. So the way that you described it is that the brain is but a representation of these higher order information processes.
Well, it's storage, like the cell phone. Yeah.
Right.
You have so many things on there, but because if your cell phone gets damaged, it doesn't destroy you. You get a hold of people. It happens, right? My cell phone crashed. What's your phone number? Can you give me your phone number again? So you recreate, your intelligence recreates the database.
Yep.
The guy with the crowbar through his head, right?
Yep.
What's the guy?
Oh, yeah, Phineas Gage.
Yeah, famous example. The guy went on. One graduate student who was in Scientific American or something, the guy was a graduate student in chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
His instructor noticed he was doing all these notes and stuff. And he said, thinking, so why don't you go to the medical center, they scanned him. He only had 10% of his cerebral cortex, and that was mostly fibers. And he was a graduate student in chemistry, which shows you don't need a brain to be a graduate student in chemistry.
Oh.
He was compensating by using all these external systems and stuff. Yeah. Brain stroke. Some people give up. Other people start working, they find redundant pathways.
But that's exactly, that proves even more the point that you can, people change though, yes, they're not the same.
Yeah, your instrument has changed. Phineas Guy had a rough personality afterwards.
Right.
So it could be either way, maybe the person has changed, or maybe the instrument has changed.
Right.
Yeah.
Kel, I'm just wondering, starting to run over. But
okay.
Interesting discussion, so.
Yeah.
Could we maybe do, say, 5 minutes of some kirtan, and then we'll have dinner, and we can all come back and sit down and eat dinner and continue the discussion?
Okay. Okay.
Absolutely.
So just, like, hold that thought,
yeah.
No,
this is why we're having, like, symposium for years to deal with these questions, so it's not like... More like they're just always trying to show people all these options and anybody. We have a web page, okay? Our web page is Jayarama. All you need is on that. .us. Jayarama is our esoteric one. Our exoteric one for Neos is Neos Nimbus. Nimbus is the halo around us, the saint. So our web page is Neos Nimbus. And we're just really pioneering, and a lot of stuff is going on. But the reaction is very nice. There are a lot of nice people in the world who just, you know, one together and maybe change the way we're looking at things. One last thing. Umberto Maturana, the Nobel laureate guy we work with, he's a biologist. He said Darwin wasn't a biologist. Darwin was an economist. He said actually, that's why he's a Nobel laureate candidate. He's showing this at the biological level, every level. Those species that survive are not those who kill everybody else off, but those who learn how to cooperate with others, even their enemies. So that if we change that view of reality, then America and Russia, you know, what's his name, Donald Trump, and so start learning, you know. Yeah, it's gonna make a big difference in the world about how to learn how to cooperate with others rather than, you know, survival of the fittest, right? You know how many aircraft carriers are in the world? It's a very interesting thing, look it up. Something like 30 aircraft carriers in the world. The United States is the only country with more than, two countries have few countries. The other ones are Italy or something, so they don't even use the second one. All the rest are vertical takeoff ones. The U.S. is the only nation in the world that has all these, you know, these full things. Something like that's like 40% of all the helicopters in the world belong to the U.S. and so on. And they had this attitude of, you know, conquer the Indians and that Wild West and James Bond and everything else and so on. So, yeah, we're going to have problems. You know? Too many James Bonds in the world like that. You know? 7, 8, you see. Okay. Maha-mantra?
Yeah. Could you also like say a quick introduction?
Of Maha-mantra?
Yeah.
Chanting?
What it is, why?
Okay, we're just talking about it, that your cerebral cortex, if you have to do tonal discrimination, spatial discrimination, which is you can clap your hands and kind of dance to the music, and add that, temporal discrimination, singing and dancing, it's the maximum engagement of your cerebral cortex. Then if you're chanting something like, Om Mami Take Me Home, Om Mami Take Me Home, Om Mami Take Me Home, whatever it is, the mantras, you know. Oh, what ta gu siam, oh, what a gu siam, oh, what a gu siam. In Boy Scouts, we chanted that, you know. Oh, what ta gu siam. They finally held it to us. Yeah, sure, then you're... Your brain's going to be absorbing this, and it's very natural for your mind, which is always watching your brain, to follow and stuff. It's a very natural form of meditation. So, first I chant, and you listen, right? Then you chant, and I listen. And it's a very subtle form of communication, the meaning and everything else. That's where we're starting to get into higher things, like the meaning and beauty and symmetry and these things. Okay? Yeah, the mantra samples?
Okay.
Right there, okay? Hare is the Vakati form of Hara, like Tara in China, which is the compassionate, feminine aspect of divinity, say the Godhead. Krishna is the all-attractive form. See, the only nature of God is he's all-powerful, all-beautiful, all and all, all these things attract us. If Bill Gates walked in right now, what would your reaction be right there? He's like, you know how much money Bill Gates is worth? $10,000 million. It's one sidelong glance of Bill Gates, and yeah, I'm going to go to school anymore. Anyway, we're attracted by this one God. He's so beautiful, so powerful, Krishna. And Rama is the spiritual power by which we connect. So in Christianity, it's Jesus Christ is the Logos. So we have God, Guru, and Mother Mary. Okay, I'll try and put a harmonium here. Naya shall I invocation prayer. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitya Nitya Shri Advaita
I'm
interesting discussion.
Hey, it's my pleasure, mate. Australia. Hare Krishna.
So we'll grab some grub. And, you know, maybe if everybody's keen, we can just kind of continue chatting over dinner.
Okay.
Continue some Q&A. So dinner will be served outside. Please give a warm thank you.
Actually, we'll be here, but anybody wants to the next couple of nights with her or something, or Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, we've got some things going on at the 17 Mile Rocks, if people want to chase us up there.
Yeah, well, if anyone's interested, they can get in touch with either myself or just deal.
You could just message through on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
So we can provide details if anyone, I think, is careful.
Till Saturday morning? Yeah.
Till Saturday morning. Yeah. So there's a few programs around Brisbane. And if you'd like to attend anything, you can get in touch with us. So yeah, thank you all for coming. We'll serve dinner at the end of the corridor. Feel free to take your plate and bring it in. And
read that.
March will also be around. Just answer any questions you have.
I wouldn't understand.
Thanks for coming.
It's great. It's amazing though, that. The Arabs come from Spain.
Yep.
The Arabs come from there.
Yep.
It is. So in Spain, the Hindus is.
And.
No, sure.
In Hindi.
And. I was going to ask.